This cable will survive a fire.
This is The Impromptu, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. And now, your hosts for today, Michael Norton and me, Alex Knight. So Michael, what's going on this week?
Adele has taken over the world, so there's that.
I must have missed the memo on that.
Yeah, over 3 million albums in the first week in the U.S. So she has toppled the previous record, which was set by NSYNC.
Remember those guys?
Yeah, yeah. Remember that dated pop culture reference? Yeah, so they are no longer the kings of most albums sold in a week. It is now Adele. And she's on pace to have... Actually, as of that, I think she's beaten the all-time world record, which was set in Japan. The J-pop artist Utada Hikaru, her album sold around 3.2 million in Japan in a single week. So I think it's even beat that.
Why do people care so much about Adele?
Well, I think... A, she hasn't put out an album in a long time. B, she's a genuine talent, and she writes all of her songs. Like, she's incredibly authentic. She's incredibly down to earth.
She plays piano too, doesn't she?
A little bit. She can't write for piano. She confesses she's a bit slow with the piano, and she can't sing and play piano at the same time. I think she's just a genuinely nice person with real talent, and people like her. And if you're a fan of Adele, you're usually a huge fan. The big thing, I think, tying it back to tech, is she completely avoided all streaming services for the launch of this album, which some people complained about, but then inevitably purchased the album somewhere. Of course.
So it's not available for streaming. You can buy it on iTunes.
Yeah.
It's not available for streaming just on Apple Music or...
No, it's not available on Apple Music either. No Spotify, no RDO.
So no other streaming services.
Yeah. Okay. It's nowhere. You have to buy it.
So your options are either, what, CD purchase, digital purchase on iTunes, perhaps vinyl. I don't know if there has been a vinyl release.
I'm pretty sure there is a vinyl, yes.
Okay. All right.
Most major albums have actually been... released on vinyl the past, I don't know, there's been like a resurgence. I think it's been like the past 5-10 years they've started releasing like major albums on vinyl, which is kind of cool.
And actually even more recently than that, actually there's been a rise in record sale profits from vinyl. Actually they've been I think the last report that I saw was year over year, the last 2 to 3 years, I think, they've seen a dramatic spike in record sales. Now, obviously, I mean, we're not talking about, that makes it sound huge. I mean, we're not talking about anything that would eclipse digital purchases for sure. But considering the barriers to entry into getting into vinyl music, the super high price tag in comparison to digital versus streaming, the fact that you need to buy this thing called a record player and put it on there and you can only listen to them when you're at home because it's not portable. All these little things are involved before you can actually even listen to it. Despite all that, it's still impressive that record sales are now on the, I should say more specifically, vinyl sales are on the...
Yeah, I think there's still something to be said for the format. It just... Like, I've heard vinyls, and they just sound warmer than any other format. It sounds more natural to my ear.
Well, I think we should talk about this, because I've done some research on this. I've done my own comparison testing, and I've read some pretty in-depth articles about this. From my own... Now, this is just my personal perspective, my observation. I don't believe that vinyl... sounds better in any way. And actually, there are arguments that for the many technical reasons that it's actually impossible for vinyl to sound physically better than a 44 kilohertz 16-bit audio CD.
Yeah.
However, that being said, I understand where you're coming from, because vinyl records are actually mastered differently. And where it comes down to is the mastering process. And the first of all, if you were to... do a comparison side by side between the exact same album, one on vinyl, one on CD, or even digital, what you would find is that audio quality aside, the CD or digital version of that album is going to sound louder just because they're mastered. They have to be mastered differently because of the medium. And the thing is, like, CDs and digital music are, like, during the mastering process, they, just for people that don't know anything about how the mastering process works, is once you've actually recorded something in a studio, it goes through the stage of mixing, which is that you have basically an audio engineer who is basically tweaking all the levels so that they're EQ'd and at the right volumes. Then you have a separate person who actually does the mastering, which is usually done in a separate physical location, typically. And that person's job is to actually just bring the levels up so that they are at a at whatever the standard is for the format, the medium that it's being manufactured to, whether it's CD or digital. So, and it's not just bringing the levels up, but also making sure the levels are uniform and they're going to sound okay. There is a certain level that you want to get the music to. And also, the other thing was, the goal for a long time now, it's gotten better over the years, but there was a period where I know with CDs, and some are worse than others, where the whole industry was obsessed with getting music as loud as possible. And it still happens today, and I think it's more prevalent with certain genres like pop music.
Pop.
Especially pop music. Yep. Where they want to get it as loud as possible. And famously, I know Metallica's Death Magnetic album received really poor reviews for the fact that it was actually overly compressed and too loud. And I actually bought the Death Magnetic vinyl, and I don't have a ton of vinyl records, but I can say that to my ears, the vinyl version sounds better. It's not as harsh sounding. Now that comes down to the mixing and mastering stuff. So again, it's really, I think you have to look at this on a per album individual basis and examine it that way. I think it's pretty, I know a lot of people are very, like, especially staunch vinyl collectors. They're like, yeah, man, like, vinyl sounds better than, it's like, fine. I'm not going to argue with people. If it's better, if it sounds better to you, then it is better.
Yeah.
Right? That's all it boils down to.
My take on it is, I think, and I could be totally wrong about this, but a CD is burned with a laser. Like, a laser etches the data onto the disc. Vinyl, I don't know what they use now, but they used to use a needle to scratch the information into the vinyl. It might be a laser now, I don't know.
It's probably a laser, but I have to imagine.
With vinyl, you're dealing with a physical medium. You're dealing with plastic, essentially. So by etching plastic, you're going to inevitably introduce very tiny imperfections as a result of the process of etching it. Shooting a laser at a silicon medium, that's essentially just writing data. It's setting blocks to a particular position, and then another laser reads that. It's digital. But with vinyl, it's analog, and the simple act of manipulating a physical material creates kind of microscopic changes in the material as it's etched. So it sort of creates a noise, like a certain pattern of noise that I think we pick up on, maybe subconsciously, not necessarily completely aware, but yeah. You kind of feel like it somehow sounds different because mm-hmm. of that pattern of noise. And you maybe associate it with, you kind of get a more positive reaction out of it
sure.
than a purely digital playback.
Well, I think that the challenge too with vinyl and I think with any analog audio source is that it's less forgiving, and it comes
yeah.
down to the hardware that you have. So, for example, like a $100 vinyl player that's hooked up to a $50 Radio Shack phono preamp is not going to sound as good as a $500 record player with, you know, a high quality diamond needle and a, you know, $1,000 handmade British preamp that has tubes in it. You know, so all of that stuff affects the color of the sound.
Yeah.
And it's hard to judge how, exactly what does this album actually sound like? How did they intend for it to sound? Unless you have the hardware that's capable of replicating, like, this is kind of like the reference sound that you're supposed to hear.
Yeah.
And to some, I mean, I suppose with digital that it's true to some degree because, yeah, I mean, digital to analog converters matter too, but I think especially with compressed music, depending on the level of compression that we're talking about, it's way more forgiving. And I think frankly a lot of people can't tell the difference because I think they're just so conditioned to you know 192 kilobits per second MP3s that they just or they don't care either.
Yeah, and I used to be that way, and then I became like kind of a crazy audiophile. Like, actually Black Friday just now, I got a amazingly sweet deal on Amazon. $100 for a Sennheiser HD 598.
That's a higher model than my new Sennheisers that I just got.
Yeah. It's even better than the ones I have at home.
Yeah.
Cheaper too.
I'm almost wondering if I should return these and get those.
The deal is still up if you want to get it.
I should probably, because I'm within the exchange window for these headphones.
Yeah.
If for anyone curious or for anyone that cares, I'm using a Sennheiser HD380, which they sound actually amazing and they're super comfortable.
Yeah.
And honestly, I have no complaints, but you know me, nerd brain, I geek out over audio hardware and I'm always chasing what, you know, the higher end product.
Yeah.
Gotta get something better.
Yeah. And when I'm out and about, I'm now using the RHA T20i, which is an amazing in-ear monitor for a surprisingly low price considering the quality. Yeah, it's so easy to spend a ton of money on this stuff because you really do get what you pay for.
Yeah,
for the most part.
I can speak to that because, you know, going from a $150 audio interface to dedicated tube preamps in this podcasting studio that I've slowly put together over time, I can definitely say there's a huge difference in quality. Again, because you're dealing with analog gear, it makes a huge difference. You spend the money, you're going to get better sound.
Yeah, so it's actually interesting. They remastered Green Day's best album, I would say, American Idiot.
That's a very strong and bold statement to
make. I know it is.
They do have quite the discography.
They do, but I think ultimately that album stands out as kind of their biggest hit. So big it became a musical at one point.
It actually became a musical? You serious?
Yeah, I'm
seriously
serious.
Saying
that? I'm serious. Or was it 21st Century Breakdown? It might have been both. There was a Green,
so one
there was a Green
Day
musical.
Album has been turned into a musical.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Or I think it's either American Idiot or 21st Century Breakdown, or they had songs from both albums. It was like at any rate, there was a Green Day musical.
Okay.
Such a thing happened.
Wow.
So the thing with American Idiot was it was right in the height of the loudness wars. So it was mastered in such a way that everything was insanely loud. Everything. Then a few years back, they actually released a source material mastered cut of the original album. All the loudness stuff completely removed. It was basically as close as you could get to the original studio recording as possible. And if you're looking for proof that mastering matters, that is it. You can hear so much more detail. It's like a blur filter has been removed from the album.
Wow.
It's that good.
I'm excited. I'm going to have to check this out now.
One of my favorite tracks from the album, Holiday, there's the bridge where they start doing the drums and the whole thing about President Gasman, like that whole bit. Old version, the drums sound muddy and kind of fuzzy. Remastered version, you can hear the percussive force of the stick hitting the drum every time. It's sharp as hell, and it's just incomparable to the original. It makes it sound like a whole new album.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing about the... I just want to say, like, when they slap the remastered tag to an album, it's not just... Like, for if it was that substantial, like, I don't see that they could have gotten that sound out of purely from the remastering process. They must have actually remixed, like, re-EQ'd things and then
I would think so, yeah.
Remastered it. Like, well, 'cause when people think remaster, they just think, well, yes, the sound is better, but you can't just... Like, if you're saying the drums sound that substantially better, you don't get that from just adjusting, like, the levels. That is EQ and compression, and they probably took the source material and just redid it all.
Yeah, that is essentially what they did, because all of that stuff had been done from the framework of, let's make this as loud as possible.
Sure,
so they peeled all of that away.
Right.
They started from scratch, and they said, let's master this properly. And we ended up with...
Yeah.
The glorious version of the album that we have. I kind of wish they would go back and do it for more albums from that period.
Sure.
Like,
so do I. Not just for Green Day, but for there are so many bands that do desperately need albums to be remixed/remastered. And you know, it's I've seen a trend that more and more bands are actually going back and doing this, especially with old material that, you know, stuff that came out in the 60s. I mean, just look at Rolling Stones with the Sticky Fingers album that's being supervised by the band. Like, Mick Jagger is supervising the remixing/remastering process. And it sounds like a brand new album. It doesn't sound like it was, completely different. And, you know, a lot of other albums are like this too. Like, when I actually go back and listen to some of the early Megadeth albums, like, they actually re-released all of the albums, and you really notice the difference in the early stuff, like Rust in Peace, which is arguably their most popular album. I don't know in terms of sales, but I know that's one of their biggest. And you know, Countdown to Extinction and Euthanasia. I mean, all those albums sound so much better, like from the drums to the bass, to the guitars. Like, it's not only just louder, it's cleaner, it's fuller. The dynamic range that was lost on those early albums, like, you get that back.
Yeah.
Which is really what a remaster should be.
Yeah. It's like during the loudness wars, the soundstage was basically, we tossed all the instruments into a broom cupboard, and then we make the audience stand in the broom cupboard to listen to the music. But with these remasters, it's like, okay, you can all come back out now. And it's just this vast, like, it's like you're sitting there listening to them record it for the first time.
Yeah, it's really, it's strange reliving an album like that, because especially something like, if there's a band or a particular album that made a significant impact on you when you were young, hearing that material in kind of a oddly fresh way, it's, I don't even know what the right word is to describe it, but it's really awesome.
Yeah, that was basically me listening through the remaster of American Idiot. That came out, like, right in the middle of high school for me. So, listening to it again was pretty great.
Going back to the discussion about vinyl and about mastering, I don't know if you've noticed this, but a lot of new re-releases have been shipping with digital download codes, which I think is a really cool thing to do.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that that is like, the trend that everybody will follow, because I really think that that's what needs to happen. Because the thing is, like, it's nice to experience, like, sit down and pay attention and fully listen to an album top to bottom, you know, on vinyl.
Yeah.
But getting that digital download code so I can still have a copy of that and take it with me anywhere is great.
Yeah.
Especially considering that the average price for an album on vinyl is like $25 to $30. It's not cheap.
Yeah. And yeah, at that price point, it's really advantageous for them to include it because, yeah, you're not always going to be sitting at home with your record player. You want to go out. You still want to have access to that music. So by providing the digital code, it's a way to ensure that you can always enjoy that content. They've kind of done the same thing, not as extensive, but there have been releases of books where you get a code for the ebook version on the Kindle store, which has been pretty cool. Although I think those are exclusively on Amazon. Like, you buy the book on Amazon and then you either get the Kindle version for free or a discount on the Kindle version.
Okay.
Like,
okay.
They do these weird bundles where it's like, okay, you buy the book, the real book, and then we throw in the ebook.
Sure.
A lot of self-publishers have also done that. You buy the book and then you get the ebook for free.
It just makes common sense when you have a premium product with a premium price tag to just include it. Like, nobody's going to want to go and buy that album twice. Like, you know, you gave them the money. They've made a pretty substantial profit on the vinyl sale.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just do that.
Yeah, it just makes sense. And it encourages people to buy it because let's say you only have enough money for one or the other. I mean, okay, vinyls are more, but for argument's sake, let's say you could afford one or the other, not both. So by including the digital download, you're encouraging upsell. You're encouraging people to buy the vinyl because they get the digital version anyways. So they may as well spend a little bit more and then get that lovely in-home experience. Yeah, like it's just good business sense, really.
Yeah.
I mean, they can try and double dip, but in the end, they end up losing out.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's actually, speaking of vinyl, that's one thing that I want to do at some point is upgrade my player, because right now I just have a really inexpensive Sony record player that it's super popular, but, you know, it's like $120 record player, so
yeah,
not that great. It's got a built-in preamp. You can use an external preamp if you want. It has that little switch at the back if you want to set it to phone instead of line input. There's actually a company, I think it's called U-Turn. I follow them on Twitter, and their business model is they basically set out to build a really high quality record player that was hand built, looks really great aesthetically, which is something that's not really done in the record player market. They're usually, you know, a lot of the higher end models are, you know, hand built in England, and they command a very high price tag, and they wanted to, they I think have been able to successfully prove that you can make a business out of selling a really nice record player without charging an arm and a leg. And I think it just shows that, like, what the actual markup, it's really exposed what the markup is.
Yeah.
They're just overpriced. Like, I'm sorry, $2,000 for a record player? Get the hell out.
Yeah. And the reason for that is that very few people actually make them nowadays. There's so few. The demand has been so much lower that it's essentially like, well, you can either get this budget one that this company just maintains forever, or you can buy ours. We're the only company that makes these really good ones, so we're going to charge you lots of money because we're the only game in town if you want a good one. And that's the way it's been because, yeah, demand is incredibly low. Like, though there's been a resurgence, it's still very niche. Like, they're not selling like iPods. Let's put it that way.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm actually just looking at the website. So their website is U-Turn. So it's U as in the letter U, turnaudio.com. And it's interesting. They've got, they have a very simple lineup. Basically, you can choose their lower end player. Let's look at how much it is. I think it's less than two. So the basic turntable is $179 US, which is incredible. And it looks beautiful. It comes in an array of different colors. I just sent you the link, Michael. It comes in a black color, polished green, blue, kind of a cream white color, and a red color. Everyone knows on Twitter, red is my thing. And it looks beautiful. And it looks extremely well built. All the reviews, everyone says positive things about it. And of course, if you have deeper pockets, you can go with the higher end model, which is $309. But they also recently, I think within the last 6 months, I could be wrong. Anyways, they built this new dedicated preamp. It's called the Pluto Phono preamp. And with these record players, they don't have a built-in preamp, which makes sense because you want an external one that you can just easily swap. You don't want to be locked into some cheap preamp. But yeah, their preamp is like $90 and looks like it would rival most preamps in that price range. So I'm going to get one of these and, perhaps in a future episode, report back on what my results are with it. 'Cause I have a pretty good sound system, pretty good speakers. So it will be interesting to see with my exact same setup right now, what kind of quality difference I'm going to get just by swapping the record player and the preamp.
Mm-hmm.
Now, unfortunately, if I had deeper pockets, the one I would probably be getting is one of those, 50-year-old Macintosh tube preamps,
think
Jack White famously loves. They're like $4,000 on eBay. And I don't have $4,000 burning a hole in my pocket just for a preamp.
That would be a little excessive. Though, well, I mean,
it's not excessive if that's what your hobby is and that's what you love, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's all a matter of perspective and what your priorities are.
True. True, true, true.
I mean, I didn't have to spend the money that I did on the equipment that's sitting beside you, but I could have bought $100 two-channel USB interface, but
no. And it will sound like this.
Well, not quite.
Yeah, no. There would be a lot of hiss, though. I think it's like with any hobby. Like, if you really love it that much, then you're kind of focused on getting the best you can possibly get. And yeah, I mean, it's like that for me with headphones and listening to music. I'm always looking for the better headphone set, always looking for the better amp. Like right now I have the...
Actually, so I'm just going to interrupt you for a quick sec. The what was the model of the new Sennheisers that you got? Was the 580?
The 598.
Do they require a preamp?
They do not, but... Actually, no. Their driver requirements are quite low, I think.
Okay.
Like it doesn't absolutely require one,
sure.
But it'll sound better with one.
See, I'm even curious with my HD380s. I don't know how, again, because I don't have anything to compare it to. I don't know how good the DAC is in the built-in sound card on the MacBook Pro. So I thought about maybe getting an external preamp. Like headphone amp, just to see, like, do my Sennheiser sound better through that rather than the built-in laptop sound card. I would have to imagine there'd be some discernible difference.
Oh yeah, definitely. I would actually recommend, if you're looking to get your feet wet in this,
I do. Don't send me one that's $1,000.
No, 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 no. This is the one I have. Hold on. You're going to want to go to Headphone Bar, which is a local shop that sells all your high-end...
Local as in they're in Vancouver?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know this.
They actually moved to a giant warehouse on Main Street near... it's kind of the part of Main Street near Queen Elizabeth Park.
I'm on their website right now. I think you actually sent me here once, but I didn't...
Yeah, probably.
I didn't buy anything.
They are amazing. They will let you try out everything.
Oh, I have to go there. I'm going to be like a kid in a candy store.
Oh, it's wonderful. So the amp I have is...
They have a sale on a Marantz headphone amp. It's $900 on sale. What a bargain.
Oh, you know what? Actually, this might be a good one if they don't have the one I have. I have the Fio E10 Olympus.
Mm-hmm.
but they also have a rather good deal on the Hi-Fi Man EF3.
Interesting.
Which actually appears to have vacuum tubes in it.
I am definitely a fan of tubes because my guitar amp has a lot of tubes in it, and the two microphones that are in this podcast studio are plugged directly into a preamp with tubes, and even my compressor has tubes in it. So I love tubes. I love tubes. They just give everything a nice warm sound. But it's interesting. I'm wondering if I can maybe run, if I get a headphone app, maybe I can actually directly from my analog stuff have that in between. So have the audio that comes out of my gear go directly into the headphone amp, and then from there split it into the headphone, the four-channel headphone amp thing that I have.
Yeah, you can. Most of them have quite a few inputs. The one I have has micro USB and...
Oh my God, I just found one with a bunch of tubes on it, and it's $2,334.
Oh yeah, they sell...
By Woo Audio.
Yeah, they sell some very high-end ones as well. You could definitely go crazy in that place. In fact, I'm willing...
It has XLR inputs, no wonder.
Yeah, they sell quite a lot of that. I wouldn't actually be surprised if... the website doesn't reflect their current stock because they expanded to a warehouse kind of place. So I would bet that what they actually have in store is probably two or three times what's on the site.
Which is the model that you have, though? Do you remember, like, the price range? Was it?
It was around $100.
Okay. Yeah, because they do have a few that are in the $100 to $200 price range. That's probably, I would be willing to spend like $200 on a headphone amp.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I don't know, like, I should probably go talk to them. I'm sure they're very knowledgeable, but the thing is $200 enough on a headphone amp to make a difference in quality over, say, the DACs that are in the MacBook Pro?
It is. It is already, yeah. I mean, I have a $100 DAC, and it does make a huge difference.
Yeah. I guess, economically speaking, that makes sense because, I mean, think about this is a dedicated device that does one thing for $100 versus the sound chip that's part of the logic board is probably like $10.
Yeah.
You know, from Intel or wherever Apple got it.
Yeah.
The Intel audio stuff, that's part of it.
So yeah, there's actually quite a few good options. You could go with the JDS Labs O2. You could go with the Hi-Fi Man EF3.
I'm going to have to do some research and see which one is best in that price range, because I'm sure they all have their little
There is quite a lot of love for FIO. They're out of China, but they make really good budget hardware.
The name sounds familiar.
Yeah, it's quite popular in audiophile circles.
Okay. Well,
obviously, at the higher price range, it's like
You can even, it looks like they've got, they even have smaller portable ones that you can, like, if you want to have your iPhone with you, you can take these smaller ones and put it in your back pocket or something if you really want to have, like, the best audio possible while you're out.
Yeah.
Which seems like a kind of a pain in the butt.
But it's quite difficult now because of Lightning. Once Lightning came out, the portable DACs sort of stopped working.
Is that how these actually connect?
Yeah,
because I thought they would just use the analog audio jack.
No. it uses a direct data connection to the phone.
That makes sense.
So it all still works on Android pretty well with USB, but for iPhone, it's a little more complicated. It was just fine with the 30-pin connector all the way up to the 4S. Then with the 5 with Lightning, a lot of the DACs stopped working. I think there are a few now that actually work properly, and it might have changed. Like, I haven't really looked at that in a while.
Sure.
But I think there's probably a few that work with the new iPhones at this point. But yeah, Lightning really hurt that segment of the market.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's something that I will research, and I will bring my results back to the show. What a feature date.
Yeah, you can definitely go super crazy on all of this. It's so easy to just... Because I think it's like you hear the difference that something makes, and then you're just like, okay, yeah, this is worth it. Like, if you're really into music and you hear the difference, like, my ultimate goal, and it's going to cost so much money, but I went into the headphone bar probably a few years back now, and they had the Sennheiser HD 900 with a crazy top-of-the-line vacuum tube amp, and I put on a FLAC of a live jazz album. I don't know if it was live. I'm not sure. But a jazz album. And it started playing, and if I closed my eyes, I could have sworn I was sitting in the front row to a live performance. That's how good it sounded.
Wow.
And
that sounds incredible.
Yeah. So I've essentially since then been slowly getting better and better stuff to try and get to that point to right. where I can listen to music and it sounds that good.
But it just seems like there's a near infinite amount of money that you can throw at this stuff.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Easily. Especially when you consider like all the different use cases, like, oh, here's my setup when I'm at home. Here's my setup when I'm on the bus or in the car, etc.
It's like that with any level of pro audio gear. I mean, even with music and stuff like that, music production, I mean, you know, you can buy a $400 microphone preamp and you can spend $6,000 on a microphone preamp.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's just like huge, huge differences in level of quality and what you get for the money as well.
Yeah, easily.
But then again, you have to pair those things with good microphones, really. You just can't buy that stuff and not, like, you can't skimp out. Like, if you're going to do that, you have to go all in or nothing at all.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, some things you can get away with budget. You just have to do your research.
Yeah, cables. Don't buy monster cables.
Yeah. 24 karat gold. It's so much better. All the gold. It just makes everything magic. No, it doesn't. It's actually funny you bring that up. They literally tested monster cables versus a wire hanger that had been unwrapped and plugged in. Nobody could tell the difference.
No, of course not, because everyone knows monster cables are sham. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, the jig is up.
And actually, in fact, I wanted to buy speaker cable recently, and I went to Amazon, and I'm sure our listeners are probably familiar with the Amazon Basics brand, which is just basically like white label packaged products, no wrapping, very, very cheap stuff. I mean, you can get a spool of like 100 feet of 16 gauge speaker wire for $13. It's incredibly cheap.
Yeah.
That same spool of speaker wire anywhere else in a retail store like a Best Buy would probably be $50 to $60 or more depending on the brand, especially if it's Monster.
Oh yeah. It's coated in gold with oxygen-free copper and
diamonds.
Braided nylon Kevlar weave fabric. Yeah, it's so good.
This cable will survive a fire.
Or nuclear apocalypse, holocaust from which there is no escape. War never changes. But monster cables do.
Yeah, that's the least of your worries if you're...
Yeah, yeah.
You're concerned about that.
It kind of is, yeah. Or like... Yeah, this will continue playing media through its cabling, and even if there's a freak lightning storm that fries everything, it'll just keep running. Except it wouldn't, but yeah. They really try to milk it. It's like, yeah. It reminds me of the marketing around cosmetics where I swear they literally make up words to describe the things that they've suddenly invented. Like, ooh, now we have Restylane, Xyla-life magic stuff. It makes your face even younger. Asterisk, may not work.
marketing has been one of those things that it's so powerful and can do so many things. Like, I'm just reminded of a great presentation that Don Draper made on Mad Men. And I can't remember what the name of the cigarette company was, but, you know, famously, if you've watched Mad Men, you know
that
Lucky Strike was a huge account for that company. And, later he ends up doing this presentation, and this is during the time in the early 60s where there was more and more information being released about how bad cigarettes actually were for you. And the reality is that all those cigarette companies more or less were producing the same kind of product. And one of the things that the slogan for the campaign was so simple but so brilliant. And he does Draper does the unveiling, and it just says, "It's toasted." And the CEO's like, "Well, everyone toasts their tobacco. That's just how you do it." It's like, it doesn't matter. It's toasted. It was so brilliant. It doesn't mean anything.
I know. And that's essentially modern marketing. We will tell you that this product has something special, even though it's completely meaningless and it doesn't make it better at all. But you'll think it is. That's the secret. Like, that's the billion-dollar secret. That's what they all do. Like, especially with these things, like 24-karat gold plating. It doesn't actually do anything, but hey, 24-karat gold plating. It sounds good. It's gold.
Well, the thing is about that is that it's not super practical, but, I mean, in theory, as far as if you really want to get down to the nitty-gritty details of the materials and their differences, gold is a better conductor than copper.
Yeah,
but like,
in theory
we're talking about, but these analog, well, especially digital signals, it's like,
yeah,
you don't have to worry about corrosion. Yes,
no.
Gold might be better at that, but like, what kind of freaking environment is your audio setup where that you have to worry about corrosion?
In Soviet sub, in Arctic.
Okay, fine. Yeah, if you're working in a submarine, then buy Monster cables. But, like, come on now.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, unless you're in a sub in the middle of the ocean or on a research vessel or at a research base in the Antarctic or wherever there's, like, lots of water and cold
and salt.
And salt. Unless you're anywhere like that, no. Just no. Never ever going to need it. But hey, 24 karat gold plating. It's toasted.
Well, anything else you want to add, or do you want to wrap?
No, I think we're good.
All right. Well, thank you again for listening to the Impromptu. You are listening to Michael Norton and myself, Alex Knight. And this podcast officially now has moved to the Hologram Radio Network, which, full disclaimer, I created myself.
And I branded.
And you branded. Thank you for that. It is a new podcast network launching with four shows, obviously the Impromptu being one of those four shows. Harry Marx's Covered, which is a great show where he interviews interesting authors about their books and the process of writing, which is fascinating. There's a new show that I launched called Polarized. Episode 1 just came out today, which is a show about human rights. So fair warning, it may get controversial with some of the topics getting covered, but I think it'll be interesting. And of course, there is my other podcast called The Gemcast. If you're a fan of Gem and the Holograms and you want to relive the 80s and your childhood, you can listen to that. And I am on the search for new and interesting podcasts to basically join Hologram Radio. So just very quickly, I mean, my goal with this is really, the reason why I created this is I wanted to fill a gap in that I really want to focus and showcase podcasts that are from a diverse group of people who produce really good content but haven't necessarily struck it big with their podcast, so they may not have a massive audience. So I'm hoping, my goal is really in the next couple of years to hopefully with time and effort, to really build the network into something that is pretty strong as a brand. and hopefully have a good collection of shows. So hopefully something for everyone as well. So if you would like to show your appreciation for the Impromptu, you can go to iTunes and leave us a review. We would be very, very appreciative of that. And you can contact either of us if you'd like to send any feedback by going to hologramradio.org/contact. The various email addresses are listed there as well. If you'd like to donate to us, you can actually technically do that in two places. You can either do that by going to theimpromptu.net/donate. That website's still available, or hologramradio.org/donate. Either way, the right host will get the money that you choose to donate. Donate $1, donate $2, whatever you feel comfortable with. That would be fantastic. And you can follow the show. We're on Twitter at The Impromptu. If you'd like updates on all the stuff that's going on at Hologram Radio, follow us at Hologram Radio. Pretty simple. Can't get simpler than that. And I think that's about it for now. So, Michael.
Thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.